a change in the climate. There's a change in the air. Changes are happening everywhere. Are we ready to notice? Do we dare to be aware? How can we change the atmosphere and show that we care? By now we've heard the call, but do we heed the warning? Do we look at Peter Pan and Santa Claus the same way we look at global warming?
Welcome to Eco Talk, a rather heated edition, I predict, because our topic today, with some red-hot or maybe green-hot guests to go along with it, is global warming and you. If you are among the growing number of Americans concerned about the effects of climate disruption and frustrated by our supposed leadership's response to it, or not in this case, then don't touch that dial. This show is for you and everyone you know. So call on everybody else in the household. Tell them to pull up a chair. With climate chaos arriving on our shores, of course, in the form of hurricanes Katrina and Rita last month, there is new interest in the mother of all environmental threats, and of course that is climate chaos, or better known as global warming. It doesn't really start there, and it certainly will not end there. From the trashing of the Gulf Coast to the trout habitat in Montana streams, it's all being disrupted, and it's painfully clear that climate extremes are beginning to manifest, not just in the form of melting polar ice caps way up there or killer heat waves over there in Europe, but yes, in our own U.S. of A. To talk about what's at stake and, more importantly, what you can do about it, we have Ross Gelbspan, prize-winning journalist, author, and lecturer, joining us. We'll also be speaking with Lori David, founder of the Stop Global Warming campaign. StopGlobalWarming.org is where you can find that. She's also the creator of many other great green initiatives. And then we'll be speaking with Steve Cochran, director of strategic communications for environmental defense, to discuss their Undo It campaign. And for our last partners corner, we have George Black. He is the editor of an article in the NRDC's On Earth magazine, writing about how environmentalists and fishermen are coming together to save trout habitat. And speaking of the NRDC, we are proud to say that we're sponsored by the Natural Resources Defense Council, the nation's leading environmental action organization. NRDC uses law, science, and support of more than 1.2 million members and online activists to protect the planet's wildlife and wild places and to ensure a safe, healthy environment for all living things. So now, without further delay, let's bring in our friend Ross Gelbspan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Betsy. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
That was a mouthful, all that introduction. So let's get right to what has happened since we last spoke to you. You were on Eco Talk last December when we were talking about religion's response to global warming. And since then, of course, we've had the initiation of your petition drive, KyotoAndBeyond.org. Want to hear about that. And then, of course, the arrival of extreme hurricanes.
Well, Katrina is clearly, let's talk start about Katrina if we can.
Sure.
Because this, hopefully, a lot of people are hoping this is really the wake-up call that a lot of environmentalists have been waiting for. Some of us thought that the 35,000 heat deaths in Europe the summer before last would have been the wake-up call, but it obviously wasn't. And in the case of Katrina, it's very interesting. Global warming doesn't make more hurricanes, but it definitely makes hurricanes more intense because they take their energy from the temperature of the surface waters. And in this case, you can see Katrina began as a small Category 1 hurricane when it glanced out off South Florida. It had wind speeds of about 70 miles an hour. And then when it moved over the superheated waters of the Gulf, and these temperatures were in the high 80s, it sort of ramped up to this Category 5 storm with winds of 160, 170 miles an hour. And so it's very clear that that is a real signature of global warming. There are a couple of very interesting recent studies that sort of underscore this, and sort of a larger study that was very important that came out in, I believe, April, basically says that of this excess heat that we're trapping in from our burning of coal and oil, about 80% of it is being absorbed by the oceans. And that's leading to a number of different consequences. As you mentioned in the intro, it's melting the polar ice caps. It is causing migrations of fish. They're seeing tropical fish off Seattle right now. And it's also very much contributing to the these more severe storms. There was another study out of an MIT researcher that was published just about a month before Katrina hit that said that all over the world, tropical storms have become 50% more intense over the last 30 years than they were before. And there was a study that came out actually in the journal Science between Katrina and Rita that said that, again, in the last 30 years, well, there have not been any more hurricanes. There have been a much higher proportion of Category 4 and 5 hurricanes.
And in the wake of Katrina, you wrote a riveting column that got quite a lot of publicity, as it should, called Katrina's True Name.
That's right, Katrina's real name. And in that case, I was trying to put Katrina in the context of a lot of other of these extreme weather events that we've been seeing all over the world and that haven't gotten the attention, primarily, I guess, because they're not in the United States. But, for example, we had a rainfall in the Indian city of Mumbai that dropped 37 inches in one day. We've had a prolonged drought in part of the nation's midsection. The Missouri River is at its lowest level in I don't know how many years. There was a very bad heat wave in the Phoenix area that I think killed 20 people. You're seeing a real serious drought in the Amazon rainforest with potentially very long-term repercussions if it persists. So in that op-ed that you mentioned, I was trying to put Katrina in the context of all these other extreme events that we're seeing.
Mm. Were you surprised by the force of Katrina?
I was, to tell you the truth. And I think the nation was really sort of traumatized by it, if you want to know the truth, because the initial reaction was a lot of scrambling about FEMA's lack of preparedness and the Bush administration and the disorganization of evacuation plans and so forth. And from my sort of pop psychology point of view, I think the real take-home message that's going to remain is not about where FEMA was at or where the governor's evacuation plans were at. It's really the take-home message is going to be the immense power of an inflamed nature. And I think that really was very, very traumatic to people.
For those who have a home to go back to.
Exactly.
Since we last spoke in December, of course, the Kyoto Protocol was enacted. But, of course, who was missing? Us, U.S. That triggered, or maybe you started it before, I'm not sure, the People's Ratification of the Kyoto Protocol. Tell us about that.
Well, it's interesting. The background of that is interesting, and this is a web-based effort to basically get people to sign on to ratify Kyoto and then move for 80% reductions thereafter, because the science says we need to cut our emissions 60 to 80% worldwide. But it came out of my experience. I gave a talk in Washington about a year and a half ago in which I was making the point that climate change is so big and it affects so many areas that it's really not just the exclusive franchise of environmental groups. And one of the points I was making at this talk I gave was that environmentalists should be working with groups that work on, let's say, international relief and development like Oxfam, groups that work on campaign finance reform because we're not going to get clean energy without clean elections, groups that work on corporate accountability, public health, labor, environmental justice, and human rights. And I think there are, and especially the communities of faith as well. And there are aspects of this global warming issue for every one of these other constituencies. And so as a result of that talk, a couple of people in the audience formed a group basically called the Climate Crisis Coalition, which in fact includes indigenous rights groups, people of color, labor, human rights activists, and so forth. That's a New York-based group. And their first initiative is this people's ratification of the Kyoto Protocol.
So how can people take part?
People take part, but more than that, the notion is we're trying to gather a number of signatures. I think it's up to about 40,000 signatures right now. And go to Montreal at the end of November, beginning of December, when the next round of climate talks happens, and let the delegates from other countries know that America's abstention from this is not really reflective of what the popular will is, that the people really want to take action on this. We're basically being blocked by the current administration, and as a result, we would like to make at least a gesture to join the rest of the world through this people's ratification of the Kyoto Protocol.
Now, another atrocity took place at the G8 when I understand, and you can confirm this perhaps, that there were representatives from China and India standing by there just in case George W. decided to take his head out of the sand and actually do something about Kyoto. And because he refused to, they went home and had done nothing. But those are some of the reasons that he keeps mentioning, other than it's going to, quote, wreck the economy and cost us a lot of jobs, as well, China and India are not taking part. Is that true, or do you know anything about that, that they were actually considering taking some action if the U.S. did?
Yes, and I've heard that also before. What's really important to understand, and I think the administration is sort of misusing the facts here, as you know and probably most of the listeners know, the Kyoto Protocol exempts the developing countries from the first round of cuts. It really only binds the industrial countries.
You know what, Ross, we're just about to go to a break. Can you hold that thought? We'll be right
sure
back.
Can.
Okay, we're speaking with Ross Gelbspan about global warming. This is EcoTalk on Air America. We'll be right back.
Let's just talk about the weather.